All right, it's me, Chris Gardner of the Houston Round Bar Review. Hope you're doing well out there. Joining me is Matt Norlander from CBS Sports. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's busier May than, honestly, like a busier May than has been normally the case in recent years, but that's, you know, it's probably a good thing for the sport. Create some intriguing headlines, some unexpected headlines. There's been a couple of them as of late there, but I appreciate you having me on and having a chance to talk some college hoop here, Chris.
It's always good to talk hoops. And I followed your work for a long time. You do great work. And you were one of the few, you and Dennis Dodd, to have provided a lot of details of the Las Vegas NIL event. That's really what I want to pick your brain about initially. So for those who don't know about you first, tell folks about who you are and what you do.
Sure, I can be quick on it. I'm college basketball writer, talking head, podcaster, whatever you want to say, for CBS Sports. I've worked there since 2010, dabbling a little other stuff, NBA draft, Olympics, this, that, and the other. And it's a lucky gig, blessed to have it, and appreciate the sport and all the great things it brings, but also all the chaos and sometimes nonsense that gets attached to it as well. But the story in particular you're referencing, Dennis Dodd and I teamed up on it, starting maybe about 2 weeks ago, just, you know, picking up a little of this, a little of that. And there's going to be an NIL-driven basketball event that happens in Las Vegas in November of this year, the week of Thanksgiving. There are 8 teams scheduled to play. I'll leave some of this stuff for you to lay out, Chris. But it is an event that is unprecedented and has certainly been a disrupting force in college basketball and in scheduling and its emergence. Potentially portends copycat events. And even if that doesn't happen, because there's skepticism whether this event can actually make money and be sustainable long-term, there's a lot of skepticism over that. Teams are going to be paid $1 million to participate. It's a big time thing, right?
Yep.
The scheduling landscape in college basketball in the years to come has been put on more of a delay than we have seen for a number of reasons, but so many things are driven by NIL and programs' ability to raise money and make money that everything gets impacted significantly and in profound ways. And this particular event, which is called the Players Era Festival, it is one of the biggest things to come out of college sports in the NIL space, in my opinion, since NIL became allowable just a few years ago.
And when it first was announced, and obviously I cover the Cougs first, but also college hoops overall and, you know, in general. So it's a Houston focus. I was very intrigued by it. And for a while, I was honestly, Matt, about 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
I had my doubts about it happening. But then Coach Kelvin Sampson mentioned to the Chronicle Joseph Duarte about being in a 4-team event in Vegas. And I was like, is that the same thing or what happened? Because initially it was like, I think, 8 teams. But as far as you know, it's going to be kind of the same. It's the same thing under the umbrella, right?
Yeah. So basically, if you want to get into a little bit of the nitty gritty details, 8 schools are going. The 8 schools that are playing in this are Alabama in alphabetical order. Alabama, Creighton, Houston, Notre Dame, Oregon, Rutgers, San Diego State, and Texas A&M. They have all signed on to participate in this event. Because you have Alabama and Texas A&M playing in it, they're both in the SEC. The NCAA does not permit, normally speaking, teams from the same conference to participate in the same multi-team event, same MTE. So the workaround from that, I'm told, the likely end game here, although it's not official yet, is that there will be 2 4-team events that will go down here and probably will be a situation where the teams in those events I'll play the other one once, so it's like a round robin.
Okay.
So Alabama, Houston, Notre Dame, and Rutgers are in one event. And so Houston, for the purposes of this podcast, would play Alabama once, Notre Dame once, and Rutgers once. The order of that, I don't know yet. And then the other one, Creighton, Oregon, San Diego State, and Texas A&M would play each other. And never the twain shall meet between those two events. There are still a few details that need to be meted out. Most notably, as the story detailed, the quote-unquote winners of this Players Era Festival will get an additional $1 million approximately in NIL opportunities for the players, and that will come with certain stipulations. Like, the players can't just be paid to play in the event. That's right. Against the rules. So the workaround with that is a separate contract that gets drawn up that says, for this amount of money, your players sign it. They're obligated to do A, B, and C while either on site in Las Vegas or in the weeks or days leading up to it. You got to do this so we can pay you for your name, image, and likeness work. And then that's how you get it done. And then an additional opportunity like that will be provided after the fact to the teams that, however the winners are determined in this thing, that will also be included.
Yeah, that's one of my questions for you. Since it's going to be a four-team MTE pod and each team plays each other, how will a winner be determined?
That has not been decided. One wonderment. This is a wonderment from me. I like to drop in a wonderment once or twice a week. I wonder, because one of my sources said that for future models, like there's talk of this being 16 teams mm-hmm. starting in 2025 and beyond, that they want to maybe have some sort of World Cup group stage play, right? And part of that is sometimes goal differential. So if you have a situation where there are 2-2-1 teams after three games of play, is it win margin? Is that how they determine whoever won the games by the most points? I don't know. But that would be my suspicion, is that it would be something like that, because obviously if you play three games, which is the anticipation, they'll play three. These teams are scheduling with the idea that they will have three games there. That if you do that, you have to have some sort of way to determine a winner. So that is not yet known or decided.
But you've reported these eight teams are locked in for 3 years, correct?
So that is the understanding, but there's the devil is in the details. So these teams have signed up to this event, and I believe most, if not all, are doing it with the understanding that they will get invited again in 25 and in 26 when the field is expected to double to 16 teams. But the schools are protecting themselves and leaving outs in terms of if the event were to fold under its own financial weight, because people by the dozens, if not hundreds, are very curious about how something like this can come along with millions and millions of dollars purportedly of being put into it and how it can be profitable, right? We'll see on that. But if it is, or if it does maintain itself and continue to be a thing in the years to come, then you would have these teams. Like, for the purposes of this podcast, yes, Houston is one of those teams. It is signed up and ready to play in this thing for the next three seasons, yes.
With the huge payouts reported for this year, all the teams in the future as well, the teams, do you believe it's a goal for it to be profitable?
Mm-hmm. I think that is a goal. Yes, I think that is an objective target for the group organizers of this, because really what's in it for you if you ultimately aren't making any kind of money off of this? But the way to that, I mean, in doing the story, you wind up hearing from coaches and other people. And I was basically telling a number of folks, I just reported on the reality of the event, the teams mm-hmm. that are involved and all the circumstances that led to it happening. I'm not a businessman and I'm not going to tell you how this thing is going to be financially sustainable into 2026 and beyond. I don't know. Maybe it won't be, but there is a group of people led by Redbird IMI, which is an investment firm, and teamed up with, you know, an upstart studio and one of its executives. And then there's a coach named Seth Berger, who has been known in the space for a long time. He created N1. And these people have been able to recruit these programs to play in this event with the prospect of paying players, you know, through NIL means and giving more power and spotlight to those players. And if this thing, through its appeal to coaches across the sport, can maintain itself, then it'll be here to stay. But it will be expensive. Sponsorships and ticket sales are normally how MTEs make their money. And are you going to get enough sponsorships to validate this? That remains to be seen. But what is clear is that a lot of schools expectedly want to be in this thing, because one of the biggest things that coaching staffs and athletic directors are dealing with that understandably has brought a lot of fatigue on is this reality that because we are in an NIL era of player empowerment, you need to have millions of dollars in your NIL collectives in order to remain competitive for some of the best players in your sport when they hit the transfer portal, right? Or even for incoming freshmen, highly touted freshmen. And it gets exhausting and if not a little bit shameful on behalf of some of these coaches to frequently have to go back to the same 4, 6, 10 people that are very, very rich and ask them for more money.
Right.
And what an event like this does is obfuscates that by having someone come on and say, here's $1 million for your collective. And that's $1 million you don't have to worry about raising. And it is a major stress reliever in a very volatile, uncertain time in college athletics.
I haven't spoken with Coach Sampson about this yet, but I hope to soon. But I have spoken to some Houston administrators in athletics, and they have, you know, NIL is the thing now in athletics. And one of the things that one of the people mentioned many times was the donor fatigue is a concern. You know, as you touched on it, going to the same folks, asking those people, yes, thank you very much for all your support, but now can you give a little bit more, you know, a little bit more than you did last year? On and on and on. Well, what am I getting for that? Well, you got to go into all this discussion about where it's going to go and the reasons for it. So this is a no-brainer for any of the schools participating. Agreed. Matt, you touched on this at the beginning. You believe that this, if it is successful, that this could be, this could not be, this may not be the last of a NIL MTE going forward in the future. Thoughts on that more?
So there's a lot of people around college athletics that are wondering if this model will be copycatted later this year, but really more in 2025 and beyond. And even if it's not $1 million, can it be something where it is 300,000, 400,000? Because this has existed with one or two other like standalone events last year and this year, like it's still out there, but it's not being marketed as such. Like a school will get paid, you know, $400,000 to be an event. And of that 400,000, the school could choose to put $200K or $300K into its NIL collector. So that's, this has happened, but now there's a wonderment if you will see other people, organizations, really rich people, try and have a four-team event or an eight-team event, probably a four-team event that is built around NIL and enticements. And in doing so, would that scrape away at some of the other MTEs in the sport? Will some of these MTEs that are out there opt to go to this model and basically flip its entire business practice on its head? Because this, for the past 15 or so years, has become the model in the sport. Four-team event or an eight-team event. I'm not talking about even Maui, although Maui's format in the years to come is a bit hazy. Can it sustain itself in the way that it's been for 40 years? There's a lot of skepticism that it can. But your other events, will they choose to not just try and pay schools, you know, low six figures, scrape through the budget to get an event on linear television and try and give you the best matchups possible? There's a lot of politicking that goes on with a lot of the schedule stuff that's like really in the weeds and minutia, but it's how the sport is built in a lot of, in November, like every year, these standalone events that account for either two or three games on a non-conference schedule, and they wind up having importance in an NCAA tournament resume. So this event in Vegas, the Players Era Festival, does emerge as an existential threat to how college basketball is assembled and scheduled through the month of November and the years to come. And if it is here to stay, then yes, the sport will be changed moving forward. Whether for better or not remains to be seen, to be honest, because I think ultimately fans want to see really good games against really big programs. And it's great to see the players getting paid, and that's a huge story unto itself. But once we get into the rhythm of the season, like you want to see the seventh ranked team in this tournament play, you know, the team that happens to be ranked, you know, 14th in the AP poll, you know, right, stuff like that. So hopefully those things can still enable themselves to happen amid the backdrop of NIL infused events emerging here in the years to come.
Because that is one thing that men's college basketball is kind of missing out, is having a lot of marquee matchups in non-conference.
Yeah, it has, Chris, some. I don't want to, like, because I make this lament maybe annually. It has some. And I prefer home and home venues over all. Give me those matchups in home and homes every single time. Kind of stinks that it's not, right? But we can always use more, and the assembly of the actual schedule to give us, you know, game on the opening day of the season, then 2 days later, here's another good one. And then 2 days after that, instead of like, oh, there's like two good games to watch in the first 8 days of the season. You want to avoid that at all costs if possible. Right. This tournament won't solve that issue because it's going to be happening over Thanksgiving week, which is obviously not the first 2 weeks of the season.
And you and Dennis mentioned this year will not be on linear. Any idea of what streaming platform Well, get it?
No, I mean, some of these things I want the answers to, but they just don't have them yet. It is not expected to be on linear television. A streaming service is the anticipated endgame here. Which one? You got me. I mean, these are all viable, legitimate questions that the creators of this event are going to have to speak to by the end of the month. They anticipate on putting out a release and having a lot of these details out there. But they are key details, and having an audience to be able to consume this product is a major factor in this. So that remains to be seen. But multiple sources said to me, the likely end game here is it will be streamed and not on traditional over-the-air television. Yeah.
And then I guess my last question for you, has the timetable for an announcement of this being done and all the I's dotted and T's crossed changed?
It has not. But I say that being 48 or so hours since I last checked in with a source on that, where it was indicated to me that by May 20th, if not 21st, we're talking here on May 14th, that's when it would be happening. So that's approximately the timeline for them to make an official announcement. As someone who's familiar with just how things can go in college athletics, if you told me it got pushed after Memorial Day, I believe you. But sources I spoke to insisted that this was going to get officially announced here in the very near future, particularly now that we have eight teams. Like Creighton left the Battle for Atlantis tournament, which created a whole other thing to join this. So yeah, I anticipate an official announcement on this sooner than later.
Yeah, Creighton leaving the Battle, that event is a whole nother discussion another time. But Matt, thank you very much for taking time. Matt Norlander from CBS Sports. And hopefully we'll touch base with you, because I'm trying to broaden out my scope. I'm not just Houston hoops, and get more national interviews and et cetera. So thank you very much for taking time on this busy day for you in hoops.
Chris, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me on, and have a great spring.